Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Hope you guys are doing great today. With us, we have Moshe Crane. And Moshe is, first of all, is a multifamily guy. We're going to go and learn a lot from him. That's for sure. That's the first thing. Second thing is a vast experience with, I would say, a very wide spectrum within the real estate sector, within the multifamily sector specifically. But he has done a bunch of stuff. He has a lot of experience also with marketing, leasing, operational. He has his own podcast. Moshe, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I can't wait. You know, before we even continue, just give us a 2-minute elevator pitch about what you do today, the company does today, and then we start digging in. We're going into the details. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't need 2 minutes. I'm director of leasing and marketing at Sage Ventures. We are an owner-operator based in Baltimore. All of our properties are local. And we are currently at 9 communities, 3,700. I don't know when this is going to publish, but we're selling a property. So we'll be down to 8, a little below 3,700 units total. We have a development arm. All of our development projects have been for sale. So we've done senior condos, 55 and better, townhomes. Those were all built and then sold individually. We're doing our first ground up lease up, which is an exciting project and a deal. So the two arms of our business coming together. And I'm having a blast.
All right, we're going to go back to it. We're going to dissect the company a little bit, and it sounds interesting. Going back to your story, and I saw that you've been through, meaning LinkedIn at least, you know, reveals that you've been through. You came from the leasing end of real estate.
I started in
Business Park, and then you went into waste management company, and then you came to Sage Ventures. Tell us a little bit about your journey, how you started, how you got into real estate, or how you got into this whole thing. Go ahead.
So I wanted to get into commercial real estate, so I started talking to everybody and anybody that I could that worked in commercial real estate. And during that process, I was discouraged from working in multifamily, and I was very interested in office and warehouse. And I met with a few people that were very kind, and eventually one of them said, hey, you know, we're looking to hire for leasing. I could introduce you to our VP of leasing, and then it's her call. And so that's what happened. I interviewed with Roberta Liss, at the time was the VP of leasing and marketing at Beko Management. She's now the president, I think, of the entire Eastern region for Cushman & Wakefield. And that's how I got into commercial real estate. So the company owned office and warehouse space. I worked at a specific business park. So there was a senior leasing. So the leasing was done in-house. We worked with brokers who represented the tenants and businesses, but we represented the company in-house. And that experience was amazing. And it really got me fascinated by all sorts of businesses because we dealt with all sorts of businesses.
And you learn a lot. You learn about the businesses, what they do, what their requirements, how business is done. It's fascinating for sure. Go ahead.
And so that process really, I did a lot of cold calling, and that made me want to learn more about other businesses, not for the sake of learning, but how I could use that when I would cold call. So for example, at this specific business park that I was leasing for, we had a tenant that was very big in the audio video event space. And so, you know, you have the conferences, there's behind the scenes companies that are doing the lightings and managing that whole process. And so there was the tenant was one of the big players in that game. And they liked our space because of the access to the different convention centers in DC, in Northern Virginia, Baltimore. And so I had to learn what made sense for companies. And then I would call the other vendors that would work with them. And I would use that name. I would say, hey, our tenant is this big company. Would it be helpful for you to be near them? And then with each phone call, I would learn something new about that whole event space, which beforehand I had no interest. And I didn't inherently have interest in the event space. I was only interested in how I could use that knowledge to cold call and get people's attention. And it became a game for me. Like, what can I learn from each one so I could use it on the next call? And that was fun. But it was very frustrating to cold call for specific office space because you could find people that are very interested, but they have a 5-year lease, or they're interested, but you don't have the right space for them. There's like so many variables that are totally out of your control and were tough. And so I did that for a while, but I really learned a lot there. And then switching to trash. So I had a friend that I would refer business to. They were a trash broker, basically. So when people would rent flex space or industrial space and they were responsible for their own trash, I'd refer to my friend. And I had a long commute. I was looking for something shorter. I'm not embarrassed to say this. I ended up getting fired. I don't know if because they knew I was looking for something or what, but fine. I was fired. It was a good experience in hindsight. And I wasn't looking to go work in the trash business, but I would go, you know, I needed to get out of the house. And I went to their office, be like, hey, can I show you guys like how, without paying for CoStar, how you can find real estate companies that you could sell to. And they ended up recruiting me and pitching me to join them. And I was there. It was fun and exciting at first. And then at the end, it was frustrating because it was trash at the end of the day. And I was there, but I was looking to get back into real estate. I was there almost 2 years. And this position at Sage came up. And for me, it was, I'm going to get this position. This will build my resume. And then I could go get a bigger marketing position at a larger real estate company. And as soon as I got here, I haven't stopped learning, haven't stopped being curious. And there's just so much about multifamily that is underrated, I think. You know, doing big office deals and warehouse deals is very exciting or attractive. And, you know, leasing apartments is not the same level, but operating the business and the nuances, there's so many parts to it. It's fast paced. And there's so many parts to it that I'm slightly obsessed with it.
Tell me something. You know what? I hear your story and I'm following you, like I'm following this track, you know, like I'm walking with you on the, you know, through memory lane, and I'm learning from everything. And obviously, you know, when we go through, you know, the career path, we learn from each, every phase, we learn something else, and you learn so much and you have so much experience. But now that you say that, you came from office space and you just nailed, you just, you know, you touched it. You said, when you come and you're talking about industrial, retail, office, there's more excitement, hotels, of course, there's more excitement in terms of the deals, right? In terms of the type of deals. When it comes to multifamily, it's obviously, I guess, the most desirable because it's more stable, because everybody needs a roof over their head and all that stuff. But you just touched something that I don't think I've ever heard. Excitement about the operational part of multifamily. I'd love to hear that perspective from you.
Well, there's so many nuances that can make you really better. than the competition. I get pumped, you know, we're a relatively small owner and management company at 3,700 units. I get pumped when we buy a property from someone who's on the top 50 in NMHC. You know, they own and manage 30,000 units and we're able to do a better job. You know, in less than a year, we can enhance the revenue by $100,000. It's exciting. It's fun.
Can you touch?
And there's so many variables. Like, let me just give you an example of how many different variables that. Okay, so lease expirations. So someone will rent an apartment and everybody will do a 12-month lease. Some will make it so that everybody moves out at the end of the week or the end of the month. So operationally, if you have 15 people moving out and they all move out on the same day, that's a nightmare for turning the units.
It is.
Now, if you stagger them, and so you have like two or three a week, then your downtime is going to be significantly less. That little change can make a huge difference. And it's also like you're trying to lease throughout the month instead of everything toward the end of the month. How you do your renewals. And I think a lot of people, the industry has been very good to people making money and people have gotten greedy. So rents are high. And so everybody wants to give all renewals huge increases. It's causing more people not to renew, which is now we're seeing rents come down because more people, the retention rate is lower and there's more product and there's more product and less demand, prices come down. So there's like I'm on a marketing chat and somebody was asking about marketing, and you know it's not just real estate marketing. And the response is like, but the question was about real estate marketing, and the question came from, well, we're not performing the way we want to, and so they're looking at marketing, but there's so many variables. It could be a pricing issue. It could be a staffing issue. Like, they're not answering you're going to get zero leases from missed phone calls. And if you're not responding to leads, and if your staff is not trained and they stink at leasing, or you don't even have staff because you're understaffed and you can't hire, there's so many parts that you're not turning units. It could be a maintenance issue. So you don't have anything ready and you can't lease. And right away it's like, well, they're not leased. So we need more leads. Let's pay more marketing. There's so many variables.
You know, to talk to someone on the marketing side, who's in the multifamily marketing side of things, this is very unique because, you know, what I would like to do, if you could walk us through, for example, I have a property. I just bought a property and I want to better understand because when we buy a multifamily property and we want to understand what market we want to, let's say it's a value add deal. And the occupancy, let's say, is at 65%, and I want to really increase it. I understand the market is great. I understand I can get the tenants over there. But the how part is very tough for me. And I need a pro like you to come in and tell me what I should do with it. And I want to do it prior or while I'm in the process of doing the acquisition. I want to already get myself, you know, going in terms of, I want to be ready once it's all acquired. I want to go out there and get the tenants and do what I need to do. What are the actions that you would say a new owner would need to get done right away?
So first, I'm not a pro. I can just tell you what I've learned and based on my experience and just based on what you've told me. So I have no idea about market conditions. I have what type of property it is, but let's actually make this practical in a scenario. You're buying a value add property that's 400 units and it's underperforming. It's, you said 85% occupied and you're going to do this value
add. I said 65, but 85 is good.
Okay, if it's 65, it's really bad. But yeah. Okay, let's go to 85.
Go 85. That's also really bad. But it's more challenging,
It probably has a lot of delinquency too. So there's residents who are not paying rent. You have to have a clear strategy of what you're doing. You can't just take your pro forma and say, well, we're going to renovate all the units and this is what's going to cost. So let's just start renovating right away. You have to be cautious of how you spend your CapEx dollars. And you also have to do it knowing that you're getting what you're anticipating you get. So what I mean by like, if you underwrite that you're going to spend $4,000 to renovate and you're going to get $200 bump in rent, test it out first. See that you actually get that and that it leases before you start renovating everything. Because some of the things that we've seen in the last 2 years is people actually pay for an increase without the renovation. And then when you renovate it, it makes it harder to get that additional bump. People will pay the $200 increase because that's what's available, but another $400 increase, they're not going to pay. So you have to test it first. Second is you have to have a strategy. And if what's unique about this business is, okay, let's say you're at 95% occupied and you have 15 people moving out this month, right? It's the first of the month. And so over the next 4 weeks, you have 15 people moving out. So to maintain your 95% occupancy, you need 15 people to come in. So to get 15 leases at the current rent is possible, whatever that rent is. Now, if you have 30 people moving in, that same rent, let's just say $1,800 rent is average, it's going to be harder to get 30 people to rent at that $1,800. So you're trying to find that sweet spot where it's the amount of leases that you need and the pricing that people are willing to pay. So when you need less, you can be more aggressive because you don't need so many leases. To get one lease for 2,000 is easier than getting 15 at 2,000. So people will do their underwriting about where they want to end up, but you don't end up by starting where you want to end up. You have to ramp up. So typically, if you lower the prices and you build your occupancy and you have cash flow, then as that's working, so I would suggest you come in and lower rents. And then as you increase your occupancy, you start to raise the rents and you watch that balance. As long as it continues to flow of what you want to get, you have to have short-term goals in order to get to the long-term picture that you want to get to. You don't go from 85% occupied to 95% occupied overnight, and then you don't get to that 95% occupied at the rents that you want overnight. So you have to tier up, level up, whatever you want to call it. Come in, lower the rents, get to 90% occupied. Okay, we see that we're getting the traction that we need, that we want. Let's raise the rents. And then as you get leases and you get closer to your occupancy, you start to raise your rents more. That makes sense?
Makes a lot of sense. And I love what you said about, going step by step, taking one step, testing it out, taking another step, testing that out. And instead of going through, I have a great idea, going through the whole thing, burning all your CapEx, and then you feel like you're dying because you didn't do the right thing.
And I mean, when I started, we made this mistake. We came in, there was a property that was totally underperforming. People were way below market rent. Let's just say the average rent was 1,000, and we're coming in and we're renovating and we're getting $1,400. So when within that first year, you have people they're coming up for renewal. And if you just look at it and say, hey, this person's paying 1,000. If they leave and we renovate the unit, we're going to get $1,400. That's a $400 bump. Let's give them a huge increase. And if they leave, great, no problem. But again, if you need 50 leases, it's going to get hard. It's hard to get 50 leases at 1400 than to get five. Right. So if somebody's a good paying resident and you have to get that occupancy first, don't push everybody out at once to try to turn over the community to residents who are paying higher rent with the renovations. Give them a reasonable increase and maintain your occupancy. We just had a revolving door because we were giving big increases. And so people are moving out and we couldn't bring people in at a faster pace than people were leaving. And they weren't leaving because they weren't happy, because we were giving big increases.
Right.
So finding that balance, if your overall goal is to turn over the community with residents with higher credit scores and make more money and are paying higher rents, you're not going to do that on day one. So don't force it on day one.
Phases. You know what? I want to shift gears for a second. Since you have experience also in the office space, right? What did you, when you came into multifamily, and you had to, obviously you learned a lot from that space, but you have to look at both. If you could give us a little bit of give us some insight about the differences between those two asset classes.
From an investment standpoint?
No. Investment, I'm talking about marketing standpoint, meaning in terms of the leasing standpoint.
The office leasing is primarily, relationships is huge, is everything. You know, so my perspective was working for a landlord directly, and so we spent a lot of time with relationships with brokers and tenant rep brokers. And tenant rep brokers, you know, when they say they do it exclusively so they don't have any conflict of interest, they don't exclude their egos in from that. So they might not be have an invested interest in specific landlords, but they're driven by relationships. And so they have a tenant who's out in the market, and obviously it's going to depend on what market you're in. I was in, you know, a suburban office market and outside of DC, so it's going to be very different if you're talking about New York City or, you know, downtown, and different. But like, they're not going to see every space. And so, but if they know you, we would do this thing where we would have them would ha you know have lunches, and the brokers from different firms would come, and just by seeing this space, they'd be like, oh, actually this could work for one of our clients. And so you have to have the relationships. Oh, that's very key. And you could come up with like different strategies and try different things. This was like when I was in this is when WeWork was just starting, but we had these large office spaces that had a lot of single offices. So it wasn't a WeWork. You would rent the individual office, and then there was like a shared conference area. I mean, we converted like 30,000 square feet of that in the business park in separate areas for these small businesses. And then we kind of did it in a bigger way, where instead of it being like individual offices, they would be like 1,500 square feet offices, and then a shared conference area. So you try it with, try different things. And it's knowing your local market. You know, what are there a lot more small businesses? Are there big businesses? What do people drive in that area? So sorry. So for leasing, it's very relationship driven. When it comes to office, that's my take.
And multifamily, meaning that if you have to compare it to the multifamily aspect.
People are not renting apartments because of relationships.
Right.
It's how the management company makes them feel. People want to live in a place that they are going to enjoy, and primarily people will enjoy a place where they feel the management cares. Everybody's going to have some
Yeah,
sort of
but from
issue.
marketing perspective, that's what I want to hear. Like you want to draw the people in. Right? You have a challenge, let's say, drawing the people in. You have that complex where people are walking in and they say, I want to live here. That's no brainer. This is no brainer. As long as managed well, the whoever is accepting them, getting them, knows how to get them in the door, knows how to show them, knows how to smile well, knows how to sell them this thing. And obviously, if it fits, it's a good fit, they'll take it. I'm talking about the one that you have to increase occupancy and you want to reach out to the community in order to get to them. What type of marketing actions? Okay, offices, relationships, the brokers, everything else in here, what would you do in order to get to the people, in order to bring them in? Again, in a market where you know that not too many people are getting into the property to go and lease on their own. You have to bring them in, and you need to do some marketing
So it
actions.
depends. It depends on where your property is and what type of property it is. But let's just say, I mean, first of all, your pricing is going to make a difference. So back to that strategy, like where you buy the property that's underperforming and you need to improve the occupancy. Everybody has an expiring lease. That was the other thing that I love about multifamily more than office. Like, so you would find that person and be like, yeah, but we're in year one of a 5-year lease. Call me. It was like, can I call you back in 3.5 years? Or if it was year one of a 10-year lease, but. Everybody in an apartment has an expiring lease. They're typically 12 months. Sometimes it could be a
Right.
little longer. Sometimes it could be shorter. But so one of the things that we do when somebody starts and they don't have any leads is it's like, hey, let's go back in our CRM, look at people who toured here 10 months ago and call them. Or, and if it's a property we've had even longer, let's go back, you know, how many people were toured this time of, you know, 2 years ago? A lot of renters stay renters. There are people who will buy homes, but they chose somewhere else, and that's the importance of having a good CRM and taking notes, so that somebody in a year from now can, or in 2 years can, pick up. Like, so if you paid that money for that lead 2 years ago, you don't have to pay for it again. You already have their contact information.
Beautiful. The importance of follow-ups.
So pricing can play a big factor, and you know I don't have data to prove this. This is my experience and my feeling, and for those who are not familiar with Jewish culture, we don't live wherever we want. We have to live in certain areas. We're very community driven. So in Baltimore, like when people get married and want to have an apartment, they already know of those communities. And those communities, the two or three options, are going to have a reputation. And so basically, in here, it comes down to like a washer and dryer in your in unit or not. And even outside of the Jewish world, most people already know about the community. It's not like you have this community, an apartment community is like a hidden secret that nobody knows about. And I got to go find people who want to come live over here. There's probably competitors across the street, a mile away. So if there are people who want to live there, so then it's figuring out how to get attention for those people who have expiring leases. We're doing a lease up. There's a community across the street that's filled with people who like the neighborhood. So it's not like selling, you know, a product that like, I have to figure out where all these people are hanging out online and getting their attention. It's understand like, okay, you want to build a reputation. You're not trying to find a needle in a haystack. Yes, there are exceptions. And that's why I said, like, it depends on your property. Like if you're in student housing and people are coming from out of town, or you're in a certain market where there's a lot of traveling. And so people are really looking who are coming to that market that don't live there already. But my experience that the far majority of prospects, either they drive by there all the time, they know someone who lives there, maybe they even used to live there, they already know about it. So it's making sure that your message. So I have two buckets for leasing, for marketing, is there's lead gen and then there's nurturing. And far too much of the marketing in our industry is focused on generating leads. It's like, hey, we have an apartment, are you interested? Versus like the quality of life here. So when your curb appeal or your maintenance team looking sharp, that's not to generate leads, right? When the person comes to the community, they're already a lead. They know about you and they're interested. But your right. maintenance looking sharp and your curb appeal being nice, that nurtures the process. And so, and when you do things that are remarkable or that stand out versus the competition, and if your leasing doesn't stink, then people are going to talk about that. And then that you'll just convert higher that way.
Beautiful. Some basic stuff about signage, you know, the appearance of the property. Obviously when you come in and you have to like it. I want to shift gears a little bit. I wanted to ask you about, since you're in the front line of what's going on in the market today, and we are going through a lot of stuff today, what is your perspective on what we're going through today in the multifamily aspect?
I'm not an economist. I don't have any
bull. Yeah, but I'll tell you something. You have the advantage of seeing how things are right now versus how they were 5 months ago and how they were during COVID, pre-COVID. So you spoke to people. That's what I would love to hear your perspective.
I think that in the future, in the next, I don't know, 12 to 18 months, there are going to be a lot of distressed assets because there was a lot of overvalue that people overpaid for properties. You know, the end of 2020, there was all this capital that was on the sideline that was hungry. And the more it started to eat, the interest rates went down, valuations went up, and a lot of transactions happened in a short period of time at extremely high value. And if there's floating debt, so now like if the interest rates start to go up and people are not operating well, there's a lot of headlines that are about how rents are so high and occupancy is being high. There are properties that are bleeding right now. And there are people who overpaid for properties and they're not managing them well. And so eventually there comes to a point where they have to sell them. They have to do something, cut their losses, whatever it might be. So interest rates are up right now. And so overall trend, and the whole system was self-perpetuating. So what would happen is you would have these high values and people started selling when they weren't norm, like they're long-term holders. And now all of a sudden they're being offered ridiculous amounts of money for their property. So they're selling and then they want to 1031 it. So normally they wouldn't pay such a high price, but they don't want to pay the taxes. So now they're willing to pay high value for a property that if they were buying it to start, they would not pay for, but because it's 1031, they're willing to pay higher.
Right.
And so that was going on. So self-perpetuating for a long time. Obviously things have really slowed down with the rise in interest rates. And I think it just hit somewhat of a ceiling temporarily. And people were chasing ridiculous rents. So, and there's a few things. Again, it depends on the market, but you know, during COVID, a lot of markets didn't have evictions. So there was a lot of inflated occupancies, people they couldn't get rid of. I don't know why people don't pay more attention to delinquency, but it's not all about having, you know, what's worse than a vacant unit is an occupied unit that's not paying rent.
Yeah, that's worse, yeah.
And people have been a little reckless on the operational side. Fraud has been crazy. And if you just look at history, the story, The Big Short, the financial crisis in 2008 was driven by people being approved for housing loans that should not have been approved.
Right.
And eventually it crumbled. So I could only guess that if the amount of fraud that the industry have seen for rentals, there are a lot of people who bought homes fraudulently and they're not paying their mortgages. And I'm not paying attention. I don't really pay attention too much to the news, but I think a lot of people have not, there's been very little foreclosures because of restrictions or whatever because of COVID. So, but my guess is that there's a lot of,
it's going to come out eventually. Yeah.
Correct. And so when that happens, so then the residential single family home market, that value goes down. And so then you have renters who can now afford houses. So that disrupts the rental market a little bit. And then you, yeah. And
they need a place to live. They're going to go to the multifamily aspect. I love those theories. I don't know what's true or what's not, but I'm curious myself because I'm seeing, you know, we saw cap rates going down crazy numbers. And now we're seeing the interest rates going up. So I'm saying, okay, cap rates are going to go up and people are going to be more, you know, open to go and buy a property. But then they're going to look at their debt service and they're going to say, I don't think I want to do that. On the other hand, as you said, if valuations went down enough and it's all a number game, it makes sense to go into this and to go into acquisitions. So I think it really depends, like you said, to come into if you have a 1031 exchange, don't have another option, you need to park your money. It's individual, but we'll have to see how it plays out. Interesting market.
Yeah.
I want to go and ask you, I looked at the website of, the company that you were in and Sage Ventures, and a very interesting company. Also a nice website, but you have three aspects there that are being promoted by, you know, in the website by the company. If you could explain, one is investing, of course, you know, calling investors to come in and join them. If you could shed some aspect on that, maybe people are interested in investing, what type of investments. The other aspect is buying. You want to buy a condo, obviously, that's what you mentioned. And the other aspect is leasing. These are the three aspects that are being mentioned on the website I saw. I don't know. You're looking at me like, what are you saying? What are you saying?
So as I spoke before, we have two arms of our business. There's the apartment communities that we own and manage and rent.
Right.
So I think that's where you're talking about leasing. So we do advertise that you can rent our apartments on our corporate website. We do have a division where we're development. So we're building and selling property and investment. So we have investors for both arms of the business.
And what's
So we're owner operators. So the owner has his own money in everything that we do. But there's outside investors as well.
Now when you look ahead, are you guys active in acquisitions right now? You're sitting
very, yeah? We're always looking.
Always looking. So what type of properties you guys are focused on? B class, A class, C class.
Yeah, it's evolved. It used to be, you know, our roots are in Baltimore, so it was class, you know, D, small in Baltimore, and we've gotten rid of all of those, and we've been buying bigger and nicer deals. We're not totally exclusively value add, but we've bought a few deals out of lease up recently, and we've done well with it. So, we actually I mentioned at the beginning that we're selling a property because it's below under 300 units, and so that's out of our, I guess you could say, our efficiency range. We're looking for larger. It's more efficient for us to operate larger properties.
And you guys manage yourself, of course.
Yep.
So that makes sense. Very, very interesting. Very interesting perspective. Moshe, it was a pleasure having you. And I'll tell you something. I would like you to tell everybody. You guys obviously can see the links above and below. Moshe, if you could tell everybody how they can find you. We spoke about the website, of course. They can find you personally, maybe listen to your podcast. Tell everyone.
I'm on LinkedIn. Not too hard to find. I'm not going to give you my address, but
It's there.
Moshe
They can
Craig.
see it. Yeah.
I'm on LinkedIn, and I did start a podcast. It's called The Curious Wire, and it's to scratch my own itch. I'm curious, and that's what drives me. And so, it's a great hack to network. And so, I reach out to high level executives in our industry. And it's one thing to say, "Hey, are you willing to talk? And can I pick your brain?" Versus, "You want to be a guest?" And I'm thankful that people have taken me up on it, and it's fun.
It's great. It takes one to know one. And guys, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I love this perspective. Moshe, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank
Stick
you, Yuji.
around for a second. And you guys, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to see you in the next show. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.